Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of slapstick. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Neeling. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm also doing good.
Welcome back from your vacation.
Thank you. Thank you. How's One Piece going? I wanted to ask you, since we're talking about TV today, you still keeping up with that?
I am. I am not powering through it super quickly, but I think I've probably watched 10 episodes since the last time we talked about it.
Cool. Still loving it?
It's a good show.
Nice. What about natto? Have you started incorporating that into your breakfasts?
I don't normally eat breakfast, but
I thought that was the plan.
I was eating it a meal a day.
Okay.
I haven't been keeping up on a meal a day. I've honestly probably been like once a week.
Once a week with natto?
Yeah.
And your miso soup?
I've been eating it.
Okay.
Yeah. Natto, miso, rice, pickles.
Warming up to it? You feel like you're acquiring the taste?
Yeah. I don't like quite love it yet. I still have to mix, you know, like mix in.
What are you mixing in? Potato chips?
Actually, I ran out of potato chips, but I could do a little tortilla chips. Got a similar. Crunched them up in there. Okay. Like a potato chip isn't more ridiculous to put in your natto than a tortilla chip is?
I don't know.
Sure. I've also mixed kimchi.
Nice. You like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get that spicy and the crunchy from the kimchi. It's good.
Totally. I agree. That's great.
Yeah. It's cool that natto is, you buy frozen actually is really nice because I just bought a whole bunch of it and like it's lasting me. I just have it.
It's convenient.
Yeah.
For sure. Have you started making dashi for your miso soup?
I got some kelp powder or something like that that I've been putting in.
Huh.
It adds a little flavor to it.
Nice. I would try shiitake mushrooms. I bet those would be really good.
Oh, yeah.
Making a dashi.
Yeah.
And then you could probably use those for something else too, you know, flavor your dashi with it and then strain them out and do something else with them once they're reincorporated or
whatever. I do eat a lot of mushrooms.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Paul, I want you to think back a couple decades or whatever to the time when you were first kind of getting into Japanese culture, getting a sense of how things work over there. Because I remember a time somewhere around there where I think you were actually showing me clips of silly things that happened on TV in Japan. Do you recall a time where you were watching a lot of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love to hear like your first impression of Japanese TV. And if you could describe some of the videos that you saw and what impression that gave you of what's going on over there.
Okay. I mean, my first impression, I think, is kind of the stereotype. I thought like, wow, this is so wacky and crazy. Japanese TV is wild all the time. One of the things I remember seeing is the silent library challenge.
What is that?
They get six guys to sit at a table in a busy library and they all try to make each other laugh. And they do like weird, like they'll pull something really weird out of their bag, you know, and like see if they get someone to laugh. And then they do like little card games and the person that loses it gets punished. So like they'll have a machine comes in, they'll like slap them in the face or all these crazy things that try to make them make noise. And if they make noise, I think they lose. I don't know exactly how the thing works. I saw more clips than like full shows.
Hmm. That sounds really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I feel like I kind of had the same impression. Like you see all these videos online with just really creative and elaborate pranks, lots of physical comedy.
Yeah.
People getting physically punished for
doing
the wrong thing or whatever.
A lot of physical pain and surprises and pranks.
So once you finally made it to Japan, did you, like the first time you went to Japan, did you watch a lot of TV in the hotel room? Were you curious about checking that out?
I was curious. I wouldn't say I watched a lot, but I definitely watched some. And my impression became like, oh, this is like mostly pretty normal.
Yeah.
You know, it's the realization that only the craziest, funniest stuff gets clipped and translated and put on the English web.
Right. I was kind of surprised my first time watching actual Japanese TV in Japan, how kind of boring it all seemed. And like, sure, I wasn't, you know, fully understanding the language and stuff. And I'm sure I would have gotten more out of it if I was fluent. But still, just like the types of things, it's just like,
yeah,
it's pretty normal.
I don't remember if it was before or after I first went to Japan, but there was an idol group I got into a little bit. And I found out they appeared regularly on this morning show or something. And I found a torrent site where I could like download these episodes. It'd take like a day to download one. And I watched a few of them and they were like very normal.
Yeah.
You know, they were just like morning news programs with a couple somewhat funny skits.
You know what surprised me a little bit about TV in Japan is like I have barely seen any anime. I feel like some people might have the impression that there's a whole lot of that. Like if you're flipping through the channels, you'll see a bunch of anime.
Right. That is not the case.
No.
There's certain times of the day you're more likely to find anime, but...
I actually saw that anime is more common late at night, like even after midnight, because most of the money they make from anime is actually on DVD sales.
Yeah. And you might find some more of the kids' anime on in like the late afternoon.
Yeah, I definitely have seen more of that.
So like the last couple times I've been in Japan, I haven't watched any TV because I have a smartphone. And I have other ways to entertain myself late at night in the hotel.
You can just look up the best of prank videos on YouTube and stuff and just skip to the cream.
Well, last
cream
time
of
I was watching some normal videos, but being in Japan, I would get Japanese ads.
Oh, that's fun.
And Japanese commercials are pretty wacky sometimes.
I almost feel like Japanese commercials are some of the best things on TV there.
Yeah, so it was pretty, it's still pretty fun seeing the commercials sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, going back to just how Japanese TV is in general, like I have seen a lot of people online, like even Japanese people saying that it's just boring. Like it's just a lot of the same kind of stuff. And like you mentioned, all these crazy videos that you find online, those are specific moments that happened that were like really extreme or really out there. And that's why they ended up on the internet being watched by people all over the world, because they were unusual even for Japanese TV, you know?
Yep.
So can we dig a little more into like what Japanese TV is really like? Like what kinds of shows are most common on there?
Yeah, absolutely. Variety shows are insanely popular.
What is a variety show?
A variety show can include anything from music to comedy skits, quizzes, wild stunts. Anything you could think of that they could put onto film, they could show in a variety show.
I feel like a lot of what I've seen on these types of shows is food. There's like such a big focus on food. Maybe they're going to a restaurant where they feature, you know, a specific restaurant. They try the food. They talk about how amazingly delicious it is. They're always saying, oishii, umai, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And making really orgasmic kind of faces as they're eating this stuff. And, you know, we talk about how local specialties are such a big thing in Japan, and they'll go around and kind of feature foods from different areas and kind of encourage people to go visit there and try different types of foods.
Yeah, there are also lots of shows that specifically feature food and travel. Like, that's become really popular lately, is travel shows.
Yeah, I think variety shows can have, like, themes, kind of, general kinds of topics that they tend to cover. Or maybe they'll cover a different type of theme in each episode, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the types of shows where you might also see little game shows or quizzes. Like a lot of those little clips that you see on the internet aren't actually standalone prank shows or game shows or whatever. They might just be little segments on these variety shows. I've seen ones where they'll actually play videos from YouTube and then just like comment on them, just talk about them. I've seen shows like that in America even now. They just pull content from the internet and they just talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think going back to the stereotype that we might have thought was true when we were younger, that Japanese TV is just a bunch of game shows and prank shows, and but it's not really accurate. Like those shows don't really exist as you might imagine them. It's just little pieces of these variety shows a lot of the time, I think. Right?
Yep.
Also, another really important point, I think, is that most of the time in that type of stuff, it's not just random people. These are professional entertainers, even in the prank segments, right? You see pranks getting played on people. Most of the time, those people that are being pranked, are celebrities, or at least we'll get to the idea of tarento, talent. You know, they're not just random strangers on the street or whatever. Also, Paul, in your research, did you come across any articles talking about how in the 90s things got like maybe a little more wacky and extreme?
Yes. That seems to have been a trend for a while, is like, how far can we go?
Yeah.
And it's since pulled back. And now you have the more laid back food travel stuff becoming more popular than the wild pranks.
And those wilder shows mostly aired late at night, I saw. So it's like really not representative of what Japanese TV was even like back then. Even when that stuff was on TV once in a while, it was not normal. Yeah. A lot of Japanese people might have even had something to say about that. Like, this is not cool. This is going too far. Maybe that precipitated that swing back towards relative normalcy.
Yep. Even now, looking up, like trying to find the funniest clips of Japanese game shows, researching this episode, so many of the top clips I could find, I saw 10, 15 yeah. years ago. You know, it's old. The same stuff has been circulating for a long time, which makes me think less new crazy stuff is happening.
Yeah, I agree. And I also thought it was interesting to think about American TV at that time and compare it to Japanese TV at that time, because we had shows like Fear Factor, and do you remember The Swan? That was kind of controversial when it came out. That was the one where they like found quote-unquote ugly people and then gave them plastic surgery and gave them like this intense workout plan and didn't let them look in a mirror for months, and then they did this big reveal and stuff.
Okay, that's wild.
Yeah. Can you imagine how much that would mess with you psychologically?
That'd screw up your brain, yeah. right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just to go back to that point, that like the idea that Japanese game shows or Japanese TV is just really wacky and like extreme and they're like hurting people and stuff.
That's the entertainment industry everywhere, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so let's talk talent, Paul. If you're flipping through the channels in Japan, you're probably going to see a lot of shows where there are these little bubbles in the corner of people, right? There's a little bubble with a person and they're making faces and
almost
reacting.
Always.
Yeah. Every show on Japanese TV, it feels like there are these little faces reacting to everything. Who are they, Paul?
They're the talent, Jason.
Okay.
But they could be celebrities of all types. You could see actors or idols, comedians often, athletes sometimes. I've seen clips of some of my favorite baseball players doing weird stuff on shows.
Nice.
Models, voice actors, even directors, people in the entertainment industry of some way.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I read that even just relatives of more famous people yeah, might be yeah. talent.
They called it nepotic taranto.
Yeah. yeah. Taranto. It's just, talent
also,
in Japanese.
I found it interesting that just being a foreigner sometimes is enough. Being a foreigner that speaks Japanese well will just get you on a show to react to things.
Yeah, it's a rare breed. Foreigner that's fluent in Japanese.
Yeah. I read of a blog of a guy about 20 years ago. I followed his blog all the time. He was a jet teacher living in Japan and a total anime nerd. And he wrote all this really funny stuff about Japanese culture. Ended up marrying a Japanese woman, getting a job at a Japanese company and kind of hating it. Because Japanese work life was like that, especially back then.
I feel like I've heard that story from multiple people before.
And then eventually he got an agent and just started getting TV gigs. Because he was a black guy from America. So he was just this big black guy. He would just show up and speak Japanese and like be on shows and they would pay him money. And he turned that into a career and like stopped writing his blog.
Wow. Man, should interview that guy.
Yeah. I wonder what he's like, up to these days.
I want to know how he feels about that. Because like, it seems like it'd be a more fun, more interesting life than, you know, a general office work in Japan or whatever. But I feel like it could also get tiring, feeling like you're just kind of a clown on every show you're on.
Yeah, I actually saw a quote from, I think it was a German guy even, that got famous on Japanese TV. And he said something along the lines of, like, I'm just there to be the dumb white guy or whatever, but yeah. they've paid me so much money, I don't even care.
I feel like I read that same thing.
Yeah.
I get the impression that a lot of the times when there's a foreigner on Japanese TV, and I don't know, maybe this isn't quite as true these days as it used to be, but I feel like a lot of time they're kind of, it's hard to tell if they're laughing with you or laughing at you.
Yeah, probably both.
Yeah.
But that's the gag, you know, sometimes.
There's even a show I'm going to talk about later where they actually cut out pieces of the show when they put it on American TV so they wouldn't offend American audiences because they like went to talk to white people living in Japan. And
yeah.
I guess they were self-conscious about the way they were portrayed there or something. But yeah, another interesting thing about this talent, the tarento, is that apparently for a lot of these people, if they don't have a lot of other stuff going on, like a separate career, being a media personality might be their main thing. And their careers can often be as short as 1 to 2 years, and they really don't make a lot of money. Like, they're just kind of middle-class minor celebrities. I don't know, maybe that happens here. I mean, generally, people on TV get paid more here than in Japan, I think. But, you know, if you're not a big name, there are people struggling, right?
Oh, yeah.
Struggling actors.
Oh, yeah. It's tough because it's not regular work.
Yeah.
Did we mention that the talent aren't just reacting? They're often participating. So, like, they'll be answering the quiz questions, or they might even be involved in some of these wacky stunts that happen.
Right. Yeah, there's kind of like a panel of people, and everything that's going on is kind of involving them somehow. Either they're commenting on it, or they're doing an activity together, or they're playing clips of them going off and doing things together, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about variety shows, we mentioned anime. What other kinds of things are on Japanese TV, Paul?
Baseball. And various sports. Sure. Soccer, other things. Movies, often late at night. Movies, dramas.
Have you watched any Japanese dramas? I know like K-dramas are this big cultural movement, right?
Right.
I'm curious to hear your opinion, actually. Why is it that K-dramas are such a big thing, but nobody's talking about J-dramas?
That's a tough question to answer, other than K-dramas are more emotional, I would say. I would argue. I've only seen a couple J-dramas.
Yeah.
But the K-dramas are just, they're just peak drama.
You think they're like, better?
I find them more entertaining.
All right.
I will say that.
Okay. News, of course. There's also news
on
the TV.
And that's about it. Nothing else.
No. All right. Ready to move on?
Well, I have a few things I came across that might help explain why some of the things we see on Japanese TV seem so goofy or out there to us based on what we're used to.
Okay.
One is Japanese humor is different.
Sure.
I mentioned slapstick in the opening. Physical comedy is really big in Japan. People getting hit, pushed over, moved, all those crazy stunts you see.
Yeah. You know what I'm really curious about all of a sudden? Just a random thought. I wonder if Mr. Bean has ever been aired in Japan, and if so, how they would react. Because I feel like that's a really great show because of its universality. Like, there's almost no talking in that show. It's all visual humor, you know? It feels like that would be kind of Japan's kind of vibe.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was really popular.
Yeah.
Wacky situations is another kind of pillar of Japanese comedy. Maybe because society there is a little bit rigid and like stay in your lane. So these like ridiculous situations happening just seem to hit with Japanese absurdism along those same lines.
Sure.
And unexpected situations are a big part of Japanese comedy.
I can see that. Yeah.
I also found a term called gaman, which is roughly enduring the seemingly unbearable with patience and dignity, something along those lines. So I think that leads to all these shows where people get put in these really ridiculous, unexpected situations, and that's fun for people to watch, their reaction to something they never saw coming, and just kind of enduring and getting through it.
That is an interesting concept. I just Googled that, actually, that term you mentioned, gaman.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that, but Wikipedia says it's a Japanese term of Zen Buddhist origin,
mm-hmm.
which means enduring the seemingly unbearable with patience and dignity. I feel like you see a lot of stuff in Japanese culture that relates to that idea and kind of reinforces that that's a virtue.
Yeah, enduring through struggle is a huge virtue, I think, in Japanese culture.
It's amazing, even like in anime, how often that idea comes up. You know, there's like the underdog, and it's just like...
Never give up, endure through everything, and you'll triumph in the end.
Yeah, and just...
Or even if you go down trying, it's the glorious way to go out, you know.
And how often you hear gambatte, right?
Yeah.
It's all just keep going, do your best, never give up.
Right? Yeah, yep.
Well, Paul, are you ready to get into some specific shows and maybe talk about how they impacted the scene in Japan, or maybe how they are representative of different segments of the Japanese TV market or something like that? You ready to talk about that kind of thing?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. I wanted to start with this one that is pretty notorious, I think, and seems to have been getting a lot more attention lately for some reason. Denpa Shonen. You familiar?
Yes.
All right. This reality show did a whole lot of crazy stuff. It was pretty extreme as a whole, I think. But there's one specific stunt that they pulled that I guess you could say is the most extreme and garnered the most attention. So just generally give you some idea about the show. This originally aired from 1998 to 2002. And the concept was that they would find some talent, usually unknown comedians looking to make a name for themselves, and they would subject these people to extreme situations for entertainment. It's kind of the main idea.
Yep.
So the most famous example is a challenge where they took an aspiring comedian known as Nasubi. That means eggplant, because this guy has a pretty long face, and people thought it looked like an eggplant, so they nicknamed him Nasubi. And in the show, they took his clothes away from him, they stuck him in an apartment with nothing but a bunch of magazines. And then the challenge was that he had to enter mail-in sweepstakes from these magazines until he won 1,000,000 yen worth of prizes. That's about $7,000 right now.
And you're not kidding when they say they didn't leave anything in his room.
Just him and magazines.
He had a table and a couple pens to write with. He had no food, no toilet paper, no toothbrush, no toothpaste, nothing.
And he had to live off his winnings. Like they gave him a few crackers a day, I saw, just so he wouldn't die. But other than that, he didn't get food unless he won it.
That's crazy.
That's pretty crazy. And they told him that, like, oh, maybe someday we'll turn this into a show. We're just kind of trying it out, you know, we'll just film you and see what happens. But in reality, they were airing it the whole time. It was like a Truman Show situation.
Yeah, they eventually started live streaming 24/7. The guy's walking around naked in his apartment with no idea that millions of people are watching every single thing he does all day.
And this was a little bit before The Truman Show even came out, I believe.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure I read that. Pretty sure that's right. So like they put in wacky sound effects and stuff, and they kind of framed it as a positive thing. You know, they're showing the times when he's happy, when he won things or whatever, or when he finally gets to eat. But like in reality, that's pretty harrowing. Like wasn't easy for him.
Yeah. And during a lot of those clips, he was acting too, because he didn't think they were constantly filming. So when he won something, he would show it off to the camera and do a big dance because he thought that was going to become the clip that became the show at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this guy had no human interaction except for the delivery man that came to his door to deliver the prizes he won.
Eventually, he did win a bag of rice, so he wasn't quite wasting away anymore, but he had to eat it raw until he figured out a way to cook it. And then I think I saw, was it like a little empty juice box type thing that he finally figured out? Like, I can put water and rice in here and then leave it close to a heating element or something?
Yeah, it was an empty gel packet.
Gel packet?
Like dietary gel.
Oh, I forgot. Exactly.
Yeah, which is crazy. You had to eat it raw at first. That's nuts.
And after he ran out of rice, you see that he was eating dog food for a while?
Yeah. I've heard conspiracy theories that the way some of this stuff played out almost seemed too good, and the producers perhaps were intercepting things he won, or did he actually win dog food, or did they give him dog food when he was starving because they thought it'd be funny to watch him eat dog food to survive? Like, we'll never know.
That's
but
dark.
Yeah, yeah. The whole show was kind of dark.
Yeah. I mean, I got a bunch more dark details to get through.
Yeah, we're just setting it up. We haven't even gotten to the worst stuff yet.
What do you have next?
I have a section called Man, They Did Him Dirty.
Is this before or after he reached his goal of 100 million yen in prizes?
Before and leading up to and then after.
Okay, you can go ahead.
So actually, I guess I already brought up most of these things, but I'll bring up one. The first article of clothing he won was, I swear to God, a pair of used panties.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and he tried them on and they didn't fit.
Bummer.
And that's why. And then he ended up being naked the whole time, which I've led to more conspiracy theories of they intercepted all his clothes wins so that he, because part of the gimmick of the show was that he was naked.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, they didn't, air uncensored nudity. They also didn't blur it out. They just put an eggplant icon over his nether regions, which is kind of funny because it makes you wonder, like, is that the origin of the eggplant being?
Right, right. You know? Which came first? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. So it took him 335 days to finally reach his goal of 100 million yen in prizes. But things didn't quite end there, did they, Paul?
No, they had to celebrate. So the producers took him on a trip to South Korea.
Wait, they blindfolded him first, right? He didn't know that he was going to Korea?
I'm not sure. I think they blinded. Told him it was a celebration thing.
Yeah. I just remember he was blindfolded for a lot of when they were moving him around. I don't remember if they did before they sent him.
I think a lot of that came, well, some of that came before. At some point, the show was so popular, people found out where he was living.
Oh, yeah, there was a part
where they blindfolded him and brought him to, like, a new studio location.
There were people, like, camped out outside of the building because they, internet sleuths somehow figured out where he was located.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, they bring him to South Korea to celebrate. They film him going on rides at amusement park and eating all this amazing food, and it's a big victory lap. And then right at the end, they bring him to another small tatami room and just say, take off your clothes. They locked him away again in South Korea and made him enter the sweepstakes in Korean, which he didn't speak or write. So he had to use a Japanese to Korean dictionary to fill out all the cards to win the contests.
I missed that part. That's insane.
Yeah. And they made him win enough value again to buy a ticket back to Japan.
But even that goalpost wasn't static. Like, they kept pushing that back because they're like, okay, you did it, but now you have to upgrade your ticket to business class. And then he does that. And then they're like, okay, now you got to push it to first class. Like, it just...
Yep.
At what point does it reach torture, you know, like psychological torture?
Yeah. And then the ending is one of the worst parts of all as well. So I don't even know if they told him he won. Maybe they did.
No, I don't think they did.
But they blindfolded him and brought him to a new room that just looked just like the old one. And he's sitting in the middle of it naked. And all of a sudden, all four walls collapse outward, and he's sitting in front of an audience of hundreds of people laughing at him.
Yeah, when he had no idea that this was even being broadcast at all for any of this time. And also, another little detail, when they brought him to this room, they didn't even tell him to take off his clothes. He was just like, here we go again, and just automatically took off his clothes.
He said at the end that he wasn't comfortable wearing clothes anymore.
Yeah.
They made it, they hurt him. They were too rough. Mm-hmm. He got too used to being naked.
I read that too.
So he'd been almost completely isolated for, I don't know, close to 18 months, I think, at this point, or well over a year. So he was completely shocked and overwhelmed when suddenly the walls collapsed and there are hundreds of people and bright lights out in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
The video is crazy.
Yeah. And over all this time, you know, he was literally like starving, sometimes.
Yeah.
He lost a ton of weight. Just imagining being in his situation, especially when they keep changing the rules, you know, every time you get some sense of victory, it's like, now you got to do it all over again.
Yeah.
Like, just the psychological impact of that is...
I just can't believe the part where he's celebrating in Korea and they bring him into a room and just say, take off your clothes. Like, I can't believe, like, what did he feel at that moment of, like, I'm back in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
I actually saw when they had him start over in Korea, he almost refused. He's like, I'm not going to do this. And the producer went in there and, like, had a one-on-one long talk with him and finally convinced him to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another really interesting layer to this is like, he could have pulled the plug at any time. You know, he could have told the producers like, I'm not doing this anymore. But of course he was an aspiring comedian and he thought this was his big shot. You know,
they seem to promise people they'd become famous and wealthy after being on this show. Like, this is going to propel you to stardom.
Mm-hmm. There was even there was a telephone in the room the whole time. And they told him that he could just call and give up if he wanted to. And the door wasn't locked like he could have left. But of course, he was naked. So what's he going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Look like a crazy person running through the street.
There's so much pressure, though, too, especially in the conformist society of Japan. We've invested all this money. All these people on this crew are getting paid to make this show. And if you leave, the show's over and we can't air anything and everybody loses all their money and we're all out of a job.
Totally.
It's a ton of pressure on that person to keep performing, stick with it.
Yeah. When you put it that way, it's a little reminiscent of like the adult entertainment industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I don't think it's okay just to say, well, he could have left.
Right.
Like, no, the producers and people in charge of that show have to be looking out for everyone involved. Like, they need to be looking out for him. And they very clearly weren't.
I didn't sound like I was victim blaming, did I, Paul? Because I did not.
No,
that was
what I meant. I just wanted to make it very clear how I felt.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was crazy. And recently, this show seems to have been getting a lot of attention. I think a big part of that is that there was a documentary produced last year called The Contestant, which I highly recommend. You can watch it on Hulu, and they interview Nasubi. They talk to the producer of the show, and it's really interesting kind of hearing their perspectives, especially their perspective, like talking about what they think about each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nasubi, after the show, is said to have trouble with comedy because he lost social skills. He became more anxious and had more trouble getting out in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
So his comedy career never took off after the show, nor really did his celebrity career.
Yeah, kind of sad.
Did it say where he is now in the documentary?
They did. Honestly, I watched the documentary a while before we started researching this, so I don't remember all the details. He climbed Everest. I think the producer like gave him money to do that or something because it was something he wanted to do.
Okay.
And then I feel like I should have notes about this, so I'm not just making stuff up, but I feel like he was kind of an activist or like doing kind of humanitarian work or something like that.
Okay. I did see that he had a best-selling book that I think was his diary maybe while he was in there or something based upon his experiences that he sold.
That'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing about him like adjusting back to normal life. Because solitary confinement is a punishment in prison. And even like for much shorter time, you know, it really messes with people. So to think about him being in basically solitary confinement for more than a year, like that would mess with anybody.
Right. If someone treated an enemy combatant like that, everyone would say you tortured the guy.
Yeah.
You know, you broke war crimes on this guy.
Right.
Is that all you got on Nasubi?
It is, but I have some other challenges that they did on that show, just to give a little more context of like what the show
was
like.
What else was on this show?
So here, I just have like three other interesting ones that I found. So there was a challenge where they stuck a couple of comedians on a desert island with no food and no idea where they were. And the challenge was that they had to build a raft and find their way back to Tokyo.
Okay.
There was another one where a comedian and a radio DJ had to hitchhike from South Africa to Norway without using any money, even to feed themselves. Like, they just had to get by with zero money for the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Paul, I thought you might like this one as a baseball fan. There's one where contestants were put in a room with a TV that only played games of their favorite baseball teams. And then if their team won, they got food and everything was fine. But if their team lost, they got no food and the lights would turn off and they would just be stuck sitting in the dark until the next day's game.
Oh, man. I haven't seen that one, but I feel like I remember you telling me about that years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember ever hearing about that before, but
okay.
Maybe your memory is better than mine.
Yeah.
Next up, we're talking about Terrace House. This is a show that aired from 2012 to 2020. It's a reality show that at first glance might remind you of The Real World, if you're familiar with that American reality show. In The Real World, they basically just took some attractive people, they stuck them in a house together, and filmed them. Kind of the same concept here with Terrace House, right?
Yep.
But the thing is, I think the main difference between The Real World and Terrace House, from what I read, is that in The Real World, it was all about conflict, right? The producers were always trying to get people in fights and things like that. And like they would do things to manufacture conflict, or they would exaggerate existing conflicts. But in comparison, Terrace House seems to be pretty mundane.
Yeah, that's apparently the draw, is that it's just the normal small frictions of everyday life versus the manufactured drama.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other big difference is that there's a panel of commentators. I don't think they had that in the real world.
Oh, definitely
right?
Not. But that's a wholly Japanese TV thing.
Going back to like we talked about with the variety shows, they always have to have people commenting on what's going on and discussing these people in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. So they stop every 10 minutes and talk about the conversations or analyze body language and try to think what people were thinking or joke about things.
With so many people like overthinking things, you know, I feel like for a lot of people, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
I've been guilty of that for sure. I feel like watching this and watching people analyze these other people, like every little movement they make and stuff,
that feels like
that would stoke anxiety, not be like calming to me.
I'm not a big fan of the body language analysts and stuff. Yeah. I feel like you can kind of interpret that stuff in whatever way you kind of want.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the impression that the people that really like Terrace House, they find it really relaxing and comforting, and it's supposed to feel less scripted than other reality shows, because it's just like a peek into some normal people's lives. And I think that's a big part of what made it so popular, right?
Yep.
It's actually become really popular in the West, too. It was available on Netflix, and I kept planning to watch it while it was on Netflix. I never got around to it. I know I've heard from listeners. I know we have some listeners that are big fans, and I'm sorry I haven't watched more of it. I'm sure that some listeners have watched a lot more than I have.
I'm not sorry. Not my cup of tea. I'm never watching that show.
Wow. You seem like you have strong feelings against the show.
No. I just have strong idea that I wouldn't really like watching it. Mm. This is not what I'm into.
I've also heard that it's really good for practicing listening to Japanese, if you're interested in learning the language. I can see that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
casual conversations.
That's one of the main reasons I wanted to watch it.
Okay. Fair enough. Not shaming anyone who likes that sort of show.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine it being comforting. You know, you get to know these characters and you go home after a long day of work and just hang out with them and get to relax. I saw the show actually described as meditative.
Okay.
Yeah. Another big difference between this and The Real World is that the people in Terrace House still get to live their everyday lives. They're still going to work and seeing their families and stuff.
Yeah, that is very different. The show seemed to center around more of the group outings or any dates that people went on, but did sometimes show a little bit of their work or family life as well.
Yeah. They would like come back to the house at the end of the day, and that's when they all kind of get to mingle and talk about things or whatever.
Yeah.
Another big draw for people in the West is that it's an interesting peek into Japanese culture, how people actually live and act in Japan.
Yep.
It's kind of interesting because it's a pretty different culture, right?
Yep.
But even with a relaxing show like Terrace House, there's some controversy present, isn't there?
There is. Part of the controversy is some former contestants say that some things were not exactly scripted, but they were pushed in certain directions or prompted to do things a certain way.
I feel like that's a really common accusation for all reality shows.
Right, right. Almost no reality TV is anything close to reality. They have to sign contracts saying that they will follow all directions on how to shoot the show or something like that. That's can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. And of course, the producers have denied that and say no one's forced to do anything they want to do. But there's apparently a clause in the contracts that if they cause a problem with production that could cost them money, like they could sue you for the money. So that would be scary, I think, as a talent on the show.
Yeah.
Trying to put your foot down too hard.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the idol industry a little bit. Like, they just have these contracts that are a little bit one-sided, and
yeah,
it just puts pressure on people to act the way the producers want them to act, you know?
Yeah. Like, what do you mean you're not going to jump off the cliff? We drove all the way out here. We've got the cameras set up. Like, we got to get the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst drama came in the final season of the show, which is maybe what ended up canceling the show permanently.
What do you mean, maybe? I thought it was pretty clear that that's the reason it ended.
I mean, I don't know 100% that the show wasn't going to end anyways, but yeah, you're right. In the final season, one of the cast members, Hana Kimura, took her own life. She was a victim of heavy cyberbullying.
Yeah, it sounded, from what I read about it, pretty minor, like the origin of this whole thing. Like, she got in an argument with another housemate, and then when that aired, everybody online just, like, you know, focused in on this little conflict and, like, blew it out of proportion, and, you know, people start hating on her, and it just turns into this whole mob mentality, I guess.
Yeah, right, and just thousands of people went after her. There were multiple people that were charged for online abuse in relation to her death.
Yeah, I read that.
Although, as far as I could tell, no one received any real punishment beyond maybe a small fine or a slap on the wrist.
I saw one person that had to pay an insultingly low fine, but I thought there were other ones that, or at least one other one that had to pay like a bit more. I don't know.
Maybe,
I don't know how much money that kind of thing is worth, you know,
maybe.
But
Kimura was actually a famous professional wrestler in Japan.
Yeah.
And her mom was too. So her mom has spoken out against the show afterwards and against the online harassment and openly said that these people didn't get punished enough for what they did.
Yeah. I don't know. We could go on a whole thing about like internet mob mentality stuff.
Yeah.
People in large groups, when they latch onto something like that, it can be really dangerous and messed up, you know? People end up saying things that they would never say. It's just like, oh, everybody else was saying that kind of stuff, so I just got in there and bashed this person too.
Best thing you could ever do for yourself is not read online comments.
Yeah. Can you imagine like being mega famous and reading just thousands of comments about how people hate you?
I mean, I can kind of imagine it, but I doubt I would read comments if I was famous. Yeah. I wouldn't waste my time.
And I think a lot of celebrities say, like, I don't read that stuff.
Yeah.
That's probably the smartest thing.
How could you and stay mentally healthy?
Right, right. Totally. Yeah. Hana Kimura, she was 22.
Yeah.
Do you remember what being 22 was like? Can you imagine?
Oh, barely, man. Barely.
Yeah.
She was also half Indonesian. So she got bullied apparently in her youth. I don't know if that played anything into the online harassment she was getting later, but so she was kind of dealing with bullying her entire life, it seems.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Ready to move on to a more lighthearted
show? Yeah, now we're about to move on to the cutest show ever made.
Did you watch much of this, Paul?
I watched like 5 minutes of it.
Okay.
This is also not my cup of tea, but I got to admit it was pretty adorable.
Yeah. This is an incredibly charming reality show that you can watch on Netflix. I believe it's still on there. It was last time I checked. The show is called Old Enough. It's been running sporadically since 1991. And the concept is they basically just show little kids going on their first errands. Maybe this kid has to make a delivery or buy some groceries. things like that. Their parents, you know, give them a little pep talk and send them out the door, and then the cameras follow them on their little adventure. It's just really heartwarming.
And when you say little kids, it's like mostly 3 to 6 years old. Yeah. So they are little kids trying to figure out how to do these big boy and girl chores.
So describe for me the 5 minutes you saw, Paul. What did you see?
Okay, so there's a girl, she couldn't have been more than four, and her mom gave her a list of food to buy for dinner. So the girl takes her backpack and walks to the local market, and she's just adorable, and she just shows up like, I'm here for food for mommy. And like goes and she grabs a couple jugs of milk for some reason, even though I don't think that was on the list. And then she talks to one of the employees who helps her get like some sort of stir fry sauce. And then she ends up buying it, like throwing money at the cashier and coming home. They helped her pack up her little backpack for her and stuff. She comes home and the mom opens it up and like, there's no food in it. She brought home like milk and sauce. She was supposed to get like pork skins and like a protein and like some green onions or something.
Oh no.
And she missed all the things she was supposed
to get. Did she have a list with her, or was she supposed to remember everything?
I think she was supposed to remember it, but she was even saying like, daddy wants pork skins for his thing. And then, but she just like didn't get them.
Yeah. It's interesting watching little kids' brains work, you know, how quickly they can forget things sometimes or like lose their way or whatever.
Hey, little kids are like smart, but they like haven't figured out how to really use their brain yet.
Yeah. I think it's fun to watch when kids make a mistake and then you get to see them like problem solve. That's a really interesting part of the show.
Yeah. So have you watched a bit of the show?
I did when it was on Netflix. Like I said, I think it's still on Netflix. I just don't have Netflix anymore, but I watched a bit of it and yeah, it's just really, it's a mood booster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's relaxing and sweet.
And don't worry, because they check the route that the kid is going to take. They make sure there's no weird, suspicious people or anything dangerous.
Yeah.
They have the camera crew and other people following the kid around.
Yeah. They inform the whole neighborhood that it's happening before it happens. So everybody's like watching and kind of ready to help the kid if they get stuck.
Yeah.
But the cameras are all hidden. Like the camera crew has them in like duffel bags and stuff.
Yeah.
So it feels to the kid like they're out on their own, you know?
Yep.
But one of my favorite things about the show is that a lot of the locations where they film are smaller towns. And I just think it's a really charming peek into that type of lifestyle, you know?
It is, yeah.
Like it just feels really wholesome and low stakes. And like you kind of get a sense of that communal nature of those types of places, you know?
Yeah.
You know, everybody's kind of watching out for the kid. There's almost no conflict. Like the biggest conflict is when a kid drops something and it's rolling down the hill and they have to chase after it or something. Like, yeah. Actually, Paul, you and I met up with a couple listeners recently, and one of them informed me that sometimes they actually follow up with these kids on this show years later and see how they're doing. That was pretty cool. I haven't seen any of that, but apparently they do winter and summer specials each year where they check in with people that were on the show in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did see that there was one person that was on the show years ago who then sent their child on their first errand on the show.
That's cool.
Yeah.
They must have had a good experience, you know?
Right.
That's kind of evidence that, you know, they're doing things right if people are willing to send their own kids on the show too.
Yeah.
I also saw that they're starting to make versions of this show in other countries. Singapore started doing their own version in 2018, and just this year, Canada is coming out with their own version.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. I feel like there's places to do that show, and there's places not to do that show.
For sure. Although, now that you mention it, it would be really interesting to watch it in some of the places where you really shouldn't do that.
Don't go there. All right, next up, we've got one of the shows of my childhood.
Really? Did you watch a lot of this?
I watched a ton of this.
Nice.
We're talking about Iron Chef.
Did you watch the American version or the original Japanese version?
I watched the Japanese version with American dubs.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, I think it aired on Food Network when I was a kid.
That makes sense.
this aired from 1993 to 2002, and it was a cooking competition that featured professional chefs that would pick an Iron Chef to go up against. And there was an Iron Chef for each type of cuisine. There was an Iron Chef French, an Iron Chef Japanese, and an Iron Chef Chinese, and I think Lee eventually an Iron Chef Italian.
So, well, I didn't watch a lot of the show. I'm sure I've seen a few episodes, but like it was never a big thing for me. But reading about it, I was amazed at how many different versions of this there were. Like, I saw that the original show aired from 93 to 99, but then there were like all these spin-offs, and they came up with different concepts to kind of do these different specials, and then all these other countries. Like, there's so many countries around the world that have their own version of Iron Chef now.
Yeah, including Iron Chef America.
Yeah, yeah.
That went, I don't know if it's still going, but it went for a long time. So there would always be a secret ingredient every week, and they had this big dramatic reveal of the ingredient. So the story was that the kitchen was built by Chairman Kaga because it was his dream to explore the culinary universe. And he was this flamboyant actor that would wear a wild suit, and then he would dramatically reveal the ingredient. The lid would be lifted off of it and smoke would puff up everywhere, and then you would see, today the ingredient is octopus. And they would have 60 minutes to figure out how to make an appetizer, a main course, and a dessert out of octopus.
Oh man, an octopus dessert. I would love to try that.
Yeah, they had to get really creative with some of the ingredients, but yeah, that was part of what was so fun.
It does sound fun.
One thing I'm a little bit unsure of is that in the American dub, it was really kind of like wacky commentary, like really funny. And I'm not sure how much of that was like taking liberty versus actually translating what they were saying.
Interesting.
I don't know if it was a running joke, but it seemed like there was the host, and then there was like one of the judges that was a man and one of the judges that was a woman, and they would comment on it. And the women would only ever say, that looks good, in like this crazy voice.
Okay. There's another show we're going to talk about where they kind of came up with, like when they did the dub, they didn't translate the original Japanese at all. They just came up with their own wacky stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Reminds me of Ghost Stories, too. We talked about that in another episode where they did that, too.
Yeah, so I was the biggest fan ever of Iron Chef Japan, and then the American one started, and I was super pumped. I never really, like, got into it. It lost some of its, like, magic, seeing it just in English by American people.
Okay. So these contestants, they're competing against the Iron Chef, right?
Yes.
How does that work? Like, if they're not competing against each other, like, are there a lot of episodes where the Iron Chef makes the best thing and it's just like, you all lose?
It's 1v1.
Oh, each episode is like just the Iron Chef and one contestant.
Like, one contestant comes in, they usually bring a couple sous chefs with them, and they challenge one Iron Chef.
Got it.
The Iron Chefs overall had something like a 70% win rate. It was commonly went to the Iron Chefs.
That would make sense. I would be suspicious if that wasn't the case. Yeah. You know,
they had practice making those dishes in 60 minutes too. It was a really time crunch thing.
So there are different judges for each episode, is it?
Yeah, there would always be three or four judges that would taste the food at the end.
I saw usually one of them is a professional food critic, but then they would bring in basically like talento, right? Just random actors or celebrities or whatever.
Yep, exactly.
Cool. All right, next up, we got Takeshi's Castle. I was excited about this one.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a game show that I think probably helped a lot to form that stereotype that Japanese game shows are really wacky and out there, you know?
Yeah.
So this originally aired between 1986 and 1990. And in Takeshi's Castle, contestants were subjected to really difficult physical trials. It was almost like just a bunch of really intense obstacle courses. There are a lot of moving parts, like really tough stuff. A lot of times, tons and tons of people would go through this obstacle course and no one would succeed. Like, they were that difficult. But it was also really fun to watch people fail, you know?
Yeah.
And if people failed, they usually fell into mud or water or some kind of like physical humiliation a little bit, right?
Yep.
And there was a loose narrative that all these people are supposed to be like an army attacking the castle of Takeshi Kitano, who is a famous comedian and actor. He actually was in Battle Royale, if you'll recall, Paul.
Oh.
Yeah. But really, the focus of the show is these obstacles. It's just really fun watching people try to get past these obstacles. Paul, have you watched much of the original version of the show?
No, this is another one that I watched when I was a kid on America with the dub.
Okay.
So, I mean,
you've seen the footage at least from the original.
Yes, but the American commentary was very different, I think.
Yeah. Well, first, do you want to describe like some of the obstacles or, you know, just give an idea of what these trials were like?
One of the iconic ones was, I don't know if it's called the ball run, but contestants had to run up a steep slope with tight walls and they would roll huge boulders down at them. And there were little pockets you could try to dive into, but there were people in there that would push you back out too. So you could only use them real briefly, and then you had to get pushed back out and try to make it up the hill without getting knocked back down by the giant boulders.
So not real boulders, right? They're not actually like lethal giant stone things.
No.
But yeah, you mentioned like the people kind of messing with you. That was a pretty common thing too. And those are like taranto people, you know? Minor celebrities would often be involved in these, and they're kind of messing with the contestants, making it harder for them. I remember like there's one with like a really narrow bridge that's swinging back and forth, and they're spraying water at the person, and they have to clamber over these things while like there's a taranto person at the other end of the bridge, like shaking it and stuff, and they have to get across. And it's all suspended over water, you know, so they fall into the water. Or like they had a bunch where it's just like these big kind of shapes rotating around that people would have to like get past somehow. Or I remember one where it's like this big cylinder that people had to wrap their arms around, and then the cylinder would spin as it went along over this pool of water. And there was like a little landing pad, and they had to perfectly land on the pad to win. But of course, most people just fell in the water, or if they landed on the pad, they would just slide off.
They would land on their ribs and bounce off.
It seems like everybody's like constantly covered in soapy water, so there's like everything's just super slippery, you know?
One of my favorites was they would have the contestant run out in a muddy field that was about knee-deep mud, and they would punt a soccer ball extremely high into the air, and the contestants had to catch it.
Yeah.
And it would often like bounce off their face or their chest or something as they were trying to catch it.
That's funny.
And the other one I remember is the Velcro wall. They would wear a Velcro suit and swing on a rope towards a Velcro wall and have to try to like plant themselves on the wall and get stuck.
Yeah. I remember that one too. That's fun. So one unusual thing about this show is that it did actually involve regular people and not just taranto, talent.
Yeah.
Like people could just apply to be in this thing. And they had like little teams, like they might be coworkers or families or whatever doing this together. That was kind of cool. I liked that about it.
I feel like the whole obstacle course idea of this show is eventually what led to Ninja Warrior type stuff.
Totally. Absolutely.
Which is a more serious, like the obstacle course is more serious. Like people train to try to beat those courses. And
yeah,
I feel like that kind of evolved out of this goofy show.
Totally. Yeah. And it is kind of funny watching Takeshi's Castle. Like the focus isn't on winning really. And like the rules are kind of so lax that winning, it feels like it means a little bit less. Sometimes they'll just say, oh, this person did really well. They're honorary winners and they go on to the next round or whatever, you know, just because they're entertaining to watch or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I saw there was like a maze one once where there was a maze without a roof so that they could film you. And someone just climbed up a wall and ran on top of the walls, like straight to the exit and won. And they were like, okay, they win.
Nice. So yeah, let's get to the American version of the show, because another unusual thing about this show is that it was eventually aired all over the world. Like not even that other countries kind of came up with their own version, but they took the original footage from Japan and aired it with their own commentary, sometimes translating the Japanese commentary and sometimes just making up their own commentary.
Yeah. What I saw was on Comedy Central, I think, and it was very made up.
I didn't have cable TV as a kid, so that's why I ended, that's why I ended up so weird. But I did somehow see this show. I think maybe eventually we got cable and then I saw it. But so the American version was MXC, right? Most Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Good memories.
Yeah, I mean, they just came up with comedic commentary, like not paying any attention to the original Japanese. And yeah, it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
I think this show might have even spread further than Iron Chef. Like, I found a massive list of countries that did their own versions of Takeshi's Castle.
I believe it.
I also wanted to mention the reboot of this show that was released just last year on Amazon Prime. I watched all of that and very much enjoyed it. You haven't seen any of that, Paul, have you?
Nope.
Well, you should check it out. So they basically recreated the original show. A lot of the obstacles are almost exactly the same. They just kind of updated them. Like, it looks like the budget is probably a bit higher. They look a little more sturdy, kind of,
yeah.
The obstacles. And some of the contestants were even in the original show back in the 80s. Like, they had such a great experience that they came back to do it again.
Okay.
So, like I said earlier, it's like little teams of five or six people, family, coworkers. And I just really like the positivity of this show. You know, you never see people really having a bad time. Everybody's just enjoying being there and just something that everybody can have fun doing together. Really embodies the Ganbatte attitude, right, Paul?
Yep.
Another thing I noticed on this new reboot of the show is there's this mascot that makes an appearance a whole lot called Chiton. Are you familiar with Chiton?
I am.
Really?
The god of advertisement.
Explain.
Chiton's been all over Twitter lately, and I don't know exactly what the shtick is. It's like they buy ads and then like will have like a meme of themselves doing something funny and be like, I'm the god of advertisements. I'm getting rid of this ad for you. Watch me do some weird thing.
Wait, this is Chiton saying this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't fully understand it, but they're getting like millions of likes on their tweets and stuff.
I haven't seen that, but I subscribe to Chiton on Instagram.
Okay.
And the videos are basically, I mean, I think the whole vibe of this mascot is what makes it so popular, because most mascots are just cutesy and that's kind of it. But Chiton is like chaotic and violent sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they just, I say they because Chiton apparently doesn't have a gender, but Chiton will just do dangerous things and like get hurt and stuff. And it's entertaining. But I do really think maybe next season we should do a mascot episode and we can talk about Chiton and all the other really well-known mascots. I think that'd be fun.
Didn't we already do a mascot episode?
Not yet.
We talked about mascots.
Yeah, it's been on my list for a long time. We just haven't gotten around to it yet.
No, we talked about mascots on the podcast once.
I'm sure we mentioned them in the Kawaii time ago. Episode.
Oh, Kawaii. Yeah, you're right. Okay. We could elaborate further.
Okay, this next one is a show that I really love. One of my favorite shows ever is called, well, in Japanese, it's called Wafu Sohonke. In English, it's called Japanese Style Originator. This show aired from 2008 to 2020. And it's the best. It was on Netflix for a while. It's not anymore, sadly. And I've been trying to find a place to watch it. And all I could find is places to download it, which, you know, are of questionable legality. And of course, I would never. So I have no way to watch it. But basically, this show focuses on Japanese culture. It started out as kind of a quiz show where they had this panel of celebrities, Tara and To, and they had to answer questions about traditional Japanese culture or food or etiquette, things like that. So I learned a ton about Japan from watching this show. And eventually the quiz part kind of went away and it became more of a variety show type thing where they just talked about different aspects of the culture. But they would play little clips of traditional craftsmen. And of course, they got little bubbles, you know, of the commentators talking about it in the corner. They would go try local specialties. I remember one episode where they tried like 50 different rice toppings. Like they eat, wow. You know, they had little bowls for each of them for all these toppings, and they talked about them and rated them and things like that.
Nice.
There was one where they focused on temples and all of the different elements of a temple and where they came from. Like they went and talked to the craftsmen that made the kind of twisted rice straw things that are hanging in front of a temple. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And like the little paper zigzag things hanging down. Really yeah. interesting. But this is that one that I mentioned earlier where when they aired the show on American Netflix, they edited out some of those segments where they went and talked to foreigners living in Japan. Because, yeah. you know, that might be seen the wrong way by Western audiences or whatever. Because they would kind of just like knock on the door and be like, hey, what are you doing in Japan? What's your life like? You know?
I know.
So, yeah, I just wanted to stick that one in there. I don't know, you know.
It's a super cool show. You showed me that years ago, Jason. It's an amazing show.
Yeah. And I heard it got pretty popular in Japan, too.
Yeah, they dive so deep that Japanese people are probably learning a lot as well.
Yeah. Well, it's fun watching, like, the commentators trying to answer these questions about traditional culture. And, like, they don't know. Yeah. You know, they're learning about it just like we are.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about Japanese game shows and reality shows quite a bit, we are going to reference some clips that we have linked in the show notes that you can watch to actually give you a visual idea of what's going on in some of these shows.
And again, these aren't necessarily clips that are representative of Japanese TV or game shows or reality shows or whatever. These are just the ones that have risen to the top of the internet. You know, you might have seen these online because they're just super widespread and they pop up randomly, it seems. You know, I come across them on Instagram sometimes.
Yeah.
Things that I saw years and years ago, they're still floating around on the internet.
I just picked a few that I found the other night that just made me laugh.
I picked some stuff that I've just seen a lot. I don't know. They're famous videos, so it seemed like it'd be fun to talk about them and give you a chance to watch them. Again, they're all in the show notes, so you can just go click the link and take a look.
Should I go first?
Yeah, go for it.
So I was laughing really hard at this one called Can You Follow Someone Around a Zoo Metal Gear Style? Referring to the Metal Gear Solid video games.
Did you ever play any of those?
No, not really. Yeah, only at either. Friends' houses. Hmm. So they had two people walking around the zoo that thought they were filming a show. They thought they were presenting a show about the zoo, but really the show was about the people following them around to see if they would catch the people following them. And there were four people, one's inside a giant cone, one's inside a trash can, one's behind one of those signs that you can like put your face into and take a picture and you look like something. And I don't even remember what the other one was. But they had to try to follow these people around the zoo the whole time. So the little trash can is walking down the road behind them, trying to keep up with them.
The last one was a little oil drum.
Oh, yeah, 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 an oil drum. And then they all had to stop and just sit there. And then people kept coming up to the trash can and opening the lid to try to throw something away. And it's just a guy's face in there. Yeah, going, oh, no,
that's
no.
freaky.
And it must have been super hot that day because they're all absolutely dripping sweat.
Yeah, this one guy comes out. I think it was the guy in the trash can. His shirt is just completely soaked and see-through because it's so wet.
Just it just kept getting funnier and funnier to me as I watched it.
That was pretty good. I like the segment called Candy or Not.
Yeah.
Basically, in this segment, I think it's from one of those variety shows or something. They brought Tarento into a room, and in the room, a bunch of things are made of candy, and they had to decide what they thought was candy, and then to test it, they would bite into it to find out if it was candy. So it was really funny, because, you know, they're all kind of, I don't know if they're all professional comedians or what kind of talent they are, but they seem to be pretty good at reacting and making silly faces, and there's the one guy that, like, bites into a shoe and he just kind of sheepishly like slowly pulls the shoe out of his mouth like that's just a shoe. It's not candy.
I think I saw in one of the clips that the presenter's bow tie was actually candy.
Yeah.
But it's funny to see them like bite a table.
Right.
And then like the moment of like is it going to break off? Yeah, or are they biting a table right now?
I think the most famous part of the clip is the guy that bites into the the door handle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he has a great, like...
Yeah, his expression is amazing. One that I really liked was the falling elevator. So they would have, I think, talent. I'm not 100%
totally
sure.
They totally
were. Yeah, so they'd have talent, and they would have someone come up and be like, oh, right this way, onto the elevator. And as soon as they were standing in the middle of the elevator, the floor would fall out from under them.
Yeah, when I saw the name of the clip when you sent it to me, I thought like the elevator was going to drop.
Everybody's
worst nightmare, standing in an elevator, right? But it's actually just the floor of the elevator falls away. And then
and they fall like down a slide into a foam pit or something.
Yeah.
But they have a slow motion camera like right on the far wall. So they would always do a slow motion cut of them slowly falling. And then their face would come into view and they'd all have some crazy scream or fear expression.
That's the whole thing, is like the slow motion part of where their face is going down.
And
they got some silly look on their face.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, like these aren't just random people. And I thought like watching this and knowing that, I found so many clues that these are not just normal people and they knew what was going on. Because when they walk into the elevator, like how does a normal person walk into an elevator? They kind of go like maybe diagonal and then turn around and stand near the back wall or something. But these people all walk straight in right to the middle of the elevator, and they're all always facing the back of the elevator when the floor opens up.
Yeah, they're always facing the right way.
And I swear some of the people, when you see them falling in slow motion, they have like a smile on their face.
Yeah, a couple of them make weird, I saw one girl like rolling her eyes up in her head and so, or something.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fun to watch.
I kept thinking too that they were slow on opening the floor. I thought someone was going to walk too far and like hit their face on the far wall or something.
Well, and they all have to be facing the back of the elevator because it's a mirror that the camera is hidden behind.
Yeah,
So they're all facing the exact same direction. Seemed a little suspicious. But I want to talk about a really famous clip that I feel like has been gaining steam on Instagram lately. I don't know. It's from a show called AK Bingo, which was a variety show that starred the girl group AKB48. That we talked about in the Idols episode. So in the clip, two cute girls from the group, because, you know, the group is all cute girls, that's their thing, they put their mouths up to either end of this clear plastic pipe, and inside the pipe is a cicada. Most people think that it's a cockroach in there. Like, if you look it up on English sites, everybody's saying it's a cockroach. It's not. It's a cicada. But the idea is they have to blow the cicada through the pipe into the other girl's mouth. So they're like blowing it back and forth and back and forth. And finally, you know, one of them takes the cicada.
Oh man.
But yeah, this clip is from like 2015, but for some reason it's still just like real big on the internet.
Because it's hilarious.
I mean, it is. It's compelling TV.
They're like stuck between, do I scream because there's a bug close to my face, or do I blow so that the bug doesn't go into my face?
Right.
Well, we're getting long. Should we leave it there or should we do a couple more?
Let's each do one more. How about that?
Okay. I'll nominate the biker through the screen is the name I came up with for it. I don't know what it was really called. But they find some pretext to sit these guys down around a table. And at the end of the table is a TV.
I think they're a boy band.
They kind of looked like a boy band. And so they're watching on this TV a bike race, and in the race one of the bikers veers off and starts heading straight towards the camera, and you feel like they're about to run into the camera person, like you're about to watch a collision. But then an actual biker gets thrown through the screen and lands on their table, I think still holding like the handlebars of his bike.
Yeah. The rest of the bike is missing. It's just the handlebars.
Yeah, and like, you know, all the guys freak out and jump out of their chairs. It must have been like a projection screen or something that they...
I feel like it was rear projection, because I saw when the biker flies through the screen, there's a ton of light that pours through from behind.
Okay.
I think that's what's going on.
Yeah, but it's really fun to watch.
Yeah. Okay, can I actually do two? I don't know which one I want to cut. I don't want to cut either one.
Do them both.
One was, I feel like I mentioned this in the outro of a recent episode when we were talking about this episode. There's that clip where there's the talent is in a massage chair in a ski chalet. He's almost naked. He's just got a little loincloth on. And then the wall opens up and he's launched down the ski hill on the massage chair. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
a really old clip.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that more than 10 years ago. But I did a little research. It's from a variety show called Mecha Mecha Iketeru. So yeah, that's all I got about that one.
Okay.
Next one, Brain Wall. Do you know anything about Brain Wall?
No.
So this was a segment on a variety show called Tonerzu no Minasan no Okage Deshita, which means The Tunnels Thanks to Everyone, which sounds like a really weird title, but Tunnels is the name of the comedy duo that stars in this show. So Tunnels Thanks to Everyone.
Yeah.
But Brain Wall, you might have seen it called Human Tetris, because the idea is that there's a wall coming at the contestants and there are shapes cut into the wall and the contestants have to fit into those shapes. And if they don't, the wall will push them into a pool of water.
Okay.
You've seen that?
I have.
Apparently, this is another one that's become really popular outside of Japan and actually spawned a ton of international versions around the world.
Yeah, there was an American one at some point.
Yeah.
I don't think it lasted long, but
I looked it up. The American one was called Hole in the Wall. It first aired in 2008, I think 2008 to 2009, and then they like brought it back in 2012 or something, but it didn't last long that time either. But
they were mean too. They would like put a fat guy out there and then like make the skinniest little like cutout like for them to go through sometimes.
That is mean. You got to give them a chance, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of fun stuff out there on the internet. You know, if you go to YouTube and type in Japanese prank, you find a lot of even just compilations of the best, you know, lots of crazy stuff out there.
Yep. It's one of your all-time quotes, Jason.
What's that?
There's a lot of fun stuff out there on the internet.
It's true.
It's true.
If you haven't been on the internet, you should check it out. It's pretty crazy, man. Well, before we go, we had one last little section that I call, Can You Get on Japanese TV? Because I feel like a lot of people have maybe heard about foreigners getting on Japanese TV, maybe even when they're on a trip to Japan, just randomly it happens, right? Have you heard stories like that, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, I was interviewed once.
Tell me about that.
It was at the airport. I think that's where they often get you.
Yeah, yeah.
It was our 2016 trip, I believe.
Huh.
And they just like stopped me at the airport and put a camera in my face and were like, could you answer some questions?
This is on your way back to America.
No, it was when I just arrived.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, okay. You know, I think they just asked me like why I'm coming to Japan, maybe a couple other questions, and that was it. They walked away. I have no idea if I was entertaining enough to have actually made it to air. And I don't know what channel they were with. I don't know what program they were with.
That's funny.
But I've heard of other people having that same experience.
Yeah.
Arriving at the airport and get a camera in your face.
I remember one time when I was in the Japanese airport flying back to the U.S., I didn't have a camera crew come up, but I had a woman come up and just hand me a survey that I had to fill out. I mean, I didn't have to, of course, but I think she gave me some candy or something as a thank you. But, you know, just questions about, yeah, like, what did you do in Japan? What was your favorite part of your trip? Things like that.
Yeah.
But also, when Gia and I went to Japan, we were at Zao Kitsune Mura, that fox village near Sendai, and a camera crew came up and asked if they could film us there. And they gave us food to feed the foxes and asked us some questions. And we asked them, like, is this going to be on TV soon? And they, like, told us what show it was going to be on and when, but we were leaving the city before it was going to air. Like, it was just a local show, you know?
Sure.
But, yeah, that was kind of cool.
So I guess the odds are good if we've both been stopped and filmed.
I guess so, yeah.
We haven't been to Japan that many times. Yeah.
But another version of that question is, can you get on a Japanese game show? Because that's kind of a whole different thing, right? Did you look into that at all?
I didn't find anything on that. I'd say a lot of them not easily because they use talent for so much of their stuff.
Exactly. I found some people like asking this question online, and it sounds like it's very unlikely for you, just a random foreigner, to get on a game show, because as you said, most of the foreigners that you see on these shows are foreign talent. You know, they pick them specifically. And I guess we covered this in the talent section. You know, Gaijin Taranto, foreign talent, is a whole subcategory of that talent pool. So, like, if you're not fluent in Japanese and you're not living in Japan and you're, you know, you don't have a way to kind of...
Yeah, you don't have an agent.
Get involved with that kind of thing. Yeah, you're not going to get on a game show, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is kind of fun to just get approached randomly by a camera crew, you know? You can... Maybe you can just look out for camera crews and go up to them and be like, you want to talk to me? Look, I'm foreign.
Just walk by really slowly. Yeah. I'm right here.
Try to lock eyes with them. Is that it, Paul? Is that all we got?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, before we go, I want to again mention our upcoming meetup this fall in Tokyo. We're going to be at Commune on the rooftop of the Shibuya Parco shopping mall at 7 p.m. on November 6th, 2024. Those details are in the show notes, and we also talked about it in our recent announcements and current events episode. I should also mention our Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes or on our website, which is sightseeingjapanpodcast.com. Also, important notice. Very important notice. This is important. If you're thinking about supporting us on Patreon, well, first of all, thank you so much for even considering doing that. But secondly, we just heard from Patreon that Apple is requiring them to use Apple's in-app payment system in order to stay on the App Store, which means that Apple will charge an extra 30% in fees to new patrons that join through the iOS app.
Yeah, so if you join at a $10 tier, you're going to pay about $13 if you're doing it through an Apple app.
Yeah, if you have an iPhone and you have the Patreon app on there, it's going to cost you a bunch more to subscribe, which is just silly. It's just silly because you don't need to do that. Like, you can just go on the desktop website, or you can even just go to the website like on the browser on your phone and avoid those fees. It's just so silly. But it is what it is. So wanted to make everyone aware of that. Also, for existing members, you don't have to worry about that. It does not affect existing members, only new members.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to support us, we thank you very much for doing that.
And use a web browser.
And yeah, use your browser so you're not just giving money to Apple every month. Like, it's monthly too. That's what really blows my mind, you know?
It's a big shift too, because it's not just Patreon. Like, I watch a lot of Twitch, and all mobile subs on Twitch now cost more than they do on the web browser.
Apple's just getting greedy?
Because Apple just made that change.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So it's so weird that you pay different prices depending on where you sign up. That just seems wild to me.
Yeah, and it's just not a good experience for anybody, it feels like.
But no, it's not.
Anyway,
yeah.
A huge thank you to all of our patrons, especially our Shogun-level patrons, Wesley C., Nicholas McKibben, Kevin Harris, Brady K., Jack, Michael Morris, David Imani, Darwin Perrier, Ethan Teague, Yasmin, Jason, Katarina and Ellery, Susan, Tori, Tina Anderson, and Shaked Rosenthal. Thank you all so, so much.
Thank you.
And for anyone else, if you don't want to make monthly contributions, but you still want to show your support for the podcast, you can make a one-time donation via the Support Us page on our website, or you could leave us a review. I love getting reviews.
Yeah, me too.
You know that on any of those podcasting platforms, most of them have a way to review us. And if you love us, we would love to know that. If you don't love us, keep it yourself.
Hey, we're big boys. We can handle some criticism.
Okay, well, I mean, if you have constructive criticism, just put a 5 out of 5 stars and then tell us, you guys are awesome, but here's how maybe you could make it even better, right?
We do read them.
We do. We want to know what people are thinking, you know?
Oh, yeah.
We want to make the best possible podcast we can. Anyway, this has been a long outro, but Paul, what are we doing next time?
Well, we had some really nice feedback on our Tokyo Day Trips episode.
We did.
So the next episode is going to be Kyoto and Osaka Day Trips.
Nice. I know that some people specifically requested that, so I'm looking forward to it.
should be a lot of fun. I hope I can dig up a few that I don't know very much about and bring them to you all.
For sure. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.